This is the Positive Vibes Podcast, a division of Proof Positive Author Services specializing in alpha reading and beta proofreading. In our seventh episode, we're talking with Aveline Fortin, author of steamy rom-com novels, as we discuss her latest book, How Do You Say Boyfriend in French? We have a terrific conversation about garnering inspiration from the cities we visit, the definitions of true success, and empowering wisdom as it translates to real life. How happy are you today?
Well, quite happy. End of school, as we were saying, end of school, first day of summer. And I rediscovered a band that I had forgotten about for so long. And you know, when you just have that surge of like energy from music that just comes out of nowhere, you know, you didn't expect it. And so that's where I'm sitting at this morning.
Which band?
The Cure.
Oh, there's something about The Cure. There's
something about The Cure. Yeah.
Excellent. Tell us about How Do You Say Boyfriend in French?
So it's a story set in Paris, and it's about a woman who let me backtrack for one second. It's the second book in the series. I know that's something we'll get to later. But so in the first book, we learn about how she sort of has had a disastrous bit of life back home in Quebec. I'm from Quebec, so I sort of identified with some of the struggles that she was going on here and needs to have a restart. So she goes to Paris for a restart. So in book one, we learn about her finding her feet. So book two, she's got a man in her life that she is interested in. So that's the big scope of it. I like to write about strong women. I like to write about women fighting some kind of battle, some kind of an emotional battle, a personal battle, could be a physical battle, and getting through it and sort of owning their power as they go through this journey. And so that's the sort of inner struggle that we're going through in the books. The hot side of things is that it is a smutty book. So there is a very attractive French man that captures her attention, and they share a secret passion in a sort of a kinky way. So that is the book.
Excellent. Where did your idea for the book come from?
So it came from a few places. I've been writing for a long time, even though these two books are the first books that I've published. I've been writing for a long time. So ideas kind of come and go from various places, something I've looked at, something an inspiration at the moment. In this particular one, step back for a second. In most books, I like to start off with a city. So I start off with a place that I've either lived in or that I've spent a lot of time in.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And that's usually where the story comes from. And so Aveline is a pen name. My real name is something else. It's because I'm an architect. So actually the built environment is a lot of what I studied and think about on my sort of most of the day.
I remember there being a lot of architectural elements in this book. So yeah. Fabulous.
So when I'm in a city, the city speaks to me in a way that with the language, with the buildings, with the urban fabric, in a way that's very deep. And I often have a lot of sentiments attached to various sections, and I always come out having a certain feeling or story. And it can be various stories. And I think in this case, I was thinking about chocolate, because again, that's part of the book. Chocolate is very important in this book. Mm-hmm. Thinking about chocolate in Paris, and it just sort of fell together the rest of the story. But it really came from Paris first. Like, what is this story about Paris? But I wanted to, instead of positioning myself, a lot of my other stories I've sort of had people live there, or they were from that city, or lived there for a long time. But here was kind of important for me to have her go there and discover it as someone, as I had, or as someone had, because I did work for some exclusive clients in Paris, and it was a really interesting experience in that sense, that then that brought back into the book.
Wonderful. It really ticked a lot of the boxes for readers who like to travel as well.
Okay.
If you want to go and explore a new city, if you've never been to Paris before, if you have been to Paris before, just seeing it through somebody else's eyes, that was a lot of
Yeah.
fun.
Oh, good.
So this you said was your the second in the series, is that correct?
The second in the series.
And
Yep.
how many books are in this series, or are you done with the series yet?
Yeah, not yet. Not yet. I'm planned for. When I started writing the first one, I realized that their story was a big story, and it wasn't a story that ended after the first kiss. It wasn't a story that ended after the first encounter, one of those. It was a story that had a lot of parts to it. And so right from the start, I knew that each one of those parts needed its own book. Book two, I finished writing. I forget when we first started talking about it. Was it in February, or I think it was before then?
Right about maybe the turn of the year,
The turn of the
thereabouts, I
year.
think,
Okay.
yeah.
And then I started working on book three, and now book two is just coming out. And I've got it pre-ordered for June 30th, so it'll be
Wonderful.
coming out very soon.
Coming next week? No, yes,
Yeah.
a week and a half.
Week and
My
a half,
goodness.
yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. And
Yeah.
now, are they standalone books? I know they're connected,
Yeah.
but it's not a trilogy per se, or connected in that way.
No, and that was something that I relied on my beta readers for, and that I wanted the reader to be able to pick up any one and still get something out of it, still enjoy that journey. So it was really important that even though they are connected, and some stories, the main story, I think in each book you can get something out of it, and it's enough to be standalone. So that's one of the first questions I ask my beta readers after my draft: can this work on its own? A few of the side characters, their plots go over the four books, so you might feel a little bit like, oh, well, we don't have a complete picture, but that's the side characters. So if you
Sure.
want to know more about the side characters, you might have to read all four books.
You just might have to. It's,
You might
they're
have
there by all
to,
means.
yeah.
That's actually a really brilliant way to do that because you're not only just satisfying the people who only like standalones, you're also satisfying the people who just want a little more, who've fallen in love with your characters and just wonder what, gosh, what happens to them in the future. So you've got a wide
Exactly.
range of people you're making happy with this setup.
Let's hope.
Oh,
So
goodness. So how long have you been publishing?
been publishing for about 5 years. The novels, it's about 2 years, but again, under sort of as an architect, I've published a couple of things and a couple of children's books. So I've been in that publishing, sort of indie publishing world for about 5 years. And then have really directed myself towards the novels in the last 2 years.
Nice. A wide range of tastes then.
Yeah.
It's amazing how I've spoken with people who have gone from like one genre to another, and I don't know how many times I've heard, how can you just stay in one? I mean, I suppose if you really like one, sure, but I've
Yeah.
seen more people go into, tiptoe into the subgenre or try something
Yeah.
new, and it's a
Yeah.
beautiful industry. You can go into anything.
Exactly. And I think that's what's nice about writing in this day and age, because previously you were very much stuck into what people saw or what people demanded, and here you can reinvent yourself a thousand times. No one will
Absolutely.
know.
I really feel like the genres in and of themselves have almost been reinvented because those restrictions have been lifted with indie publishing, because you can write about whatever you want, and oftentimes people do nowadays. So,
Absolutely. Yeah.
well, good. Now, what would you say the biggest lesson that you've learned from your writing has been?
I think the hardest thing for me, I'm naturally an introvert. I'm naturally a people pleaser. So was to step out of that box and go to a place where I can be critiqued. And I learned to do it in my day job work, but that took years. But then it was relearning that. So I guess the lesson is that no matter what you do, some people will love it and some people will hate it. And just assume that. So don't worry about it, because no matter what you do, someone will always have an opinion one way or another.
You cannot please everybody. You
can't please everyone.
It's a good life lesson too.
It is a good life lesson, because it really, we're so caught up in that in so many ways, whether it's the car we have, whether it's what we should do in life, or marital advice, or anything.
We're How are we parenting? Sure.
How are we parenting? That's a huge one. Mm-hmm. Huge one.
Now, what is the biggest success you've had as an author?
I've had to think about that one in terms of success. And success has been a bit of a question that I've toyed with, and that I went through a divorce 4 years ago and sort of had to reevaluate what I saw as success. Is it, you know, the on paper success of having, you know, the husband, two kids, car, house, all that kind of thing. And the same thing in my own work. What is success? Is it the number? Is it a number of readers? Is it a number of sales? Is it so I've sort of softened my definition to being happy with the fact that I've been able to take something that was a fragment of an idea, like we said, just Paris, that feeling that I had in Paris, and bring it to the point where I have a bound piece of tree product with 90,000 words on it, and it has this complete world in it. So for now, that's what I'm sitting with, that I've been able to have something that is physical and is real, but that contains its own universe.
Well, when you think about how many people, they want to write a book. That every year when there's a New Year's resolution to be made, there's always somebody, I'm going to write my book this year.
Yeah.
And the end of the year comes and not everybody has done that. Just getting that down on paper, that's an accomplishment that really a lot of people haven't done.
It is. It's a hard one. And I thought it would be way easier, to be honest. I wrote my first draft maybe 15, 20 years ago, maybe 15 or so. And then abandon it because I thought, this is so horrible. This is so terrible. I'm a terrible writer. Not realizing that that's the process.
That is the process. The first draft is terrible. It's awful, but it's so true. I've spoken with so many authors, and some of them are they're big time, and others are just getting started, and they all say the same thing. I never really know if I'm good enough. And it was like, holy cow. Okay. We have a common thread here.
Yes. And it's a hard one to mentally step over. It's such a challenge.
Oh, it really is. It is a hurdle for sure. So I have a quote quiz for you.
Yes.
Are you ready? I'm ready. So I pulled three quotes from your book and let's see. "You're a mighty fine female," he said, getting the words a bit mixed between French, English, and Old Western.
That's cowboy. That's the cowboy she
Cowboy Colt. Cowboy Colt. I came across that one. I was like, yeah, we got to do this one. All right. Quote number two, "Relax, just go with it. He was like a naughty imp. He would be an excellent puck in our Midsummer Night's Dream."
That's Trevor.
Yes.
The photographer. Yes,
again, that was one I was like, gosh, I have to have this one in. This is a great one too. All right. And quote number three.
Yeah.
"Yes, I know, you know, we know. But my point is, I didn't say it, but I feel it," he said.
That is Renaud.
Yes.
Our lovable Renaud. Yay.
Our main male character, the one we all fall in love with when we read this. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. One of my beta readers, or actually it was actually two of them. They, when they read that Cowboy Colt, they were like, he needs a standalone. Cowboy Colt needs a standalone.
That would be amazing. Maybe a bonus scene even, something or even a novella. He could have he really could stand all on his own. There are layers to Cowboy Colt.
There are.
Well, good. So I have five rapid fire questions for you, if you're ready.
Okay.
All right. Number one, have you met anyone famous?
So I've met the prime minister and the leader of the opposition of, I'm in Canada, so it's not as big as like in the US. Yeah, I feel
Canada's
like in the
big.
US.
Canada's
well,
big.
It's big, but it's not like the president, you know, he's such a, but anyway, I have met them and a couple of Canadian rock stars.
Nice.
Yeah.
So prime minister, would that be Justin Trudeau?
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
And the leader of the opposition at the time was Tom Mulcair. But that was a few years ago.
Nice. Yeah. And how about for Canadian rock singers? Who did you meet?
So, do you know Sam Roberts? He's a Canadian.
That does sound familiar.
Yeah. And the Tragically Hip.
Nice.
So the Tragically Hip, I was actually in Brussels and I went to see them play. And of course, I was like, I'm Canadian, you're Canadian. then,
we were chatting. It's like you seek one another out.
That's it. And so, yeah, conversation awesome. Became easy.
Wonderful. Now, what is the best compliment you've ever received?
So this one is, I thought about this a little bit and I think the best compliment that I've received is from my kids when they say, you're the best mom in the world. You're the, you know, like, we love you. There's nothing that compares to that. It means that they're happy. They're feeling a connection. They're, mm-hmm. you know, and that's just
you can't
the most
beat
wonderful
that.
Feeling. You can't.
You can't beat that. I agree. No. Absolutely. And number three, what strange thing have you eaten?
So this one's a little tricky because I've got major food allergies to many, many, many things. Mm-hmm. So I tend to eat very plain foods, mm-hmm. Plain vegetables. Probably the strangest things for a lot of North Americans is I love salted licorice, salted black licorice.
Really?
Yeah.
Salted caramels or is that?
It's not a caramel. It's like take black licorice.
Sure.
And then they cover it. They add a salt to it. It's mm-hmm. two types of salt. So your first instinct is that it's very taste or not instinct, but taste is that it's very salty. Mm. So the salt kind of covers your palate. And then as you chew it, you get more of the sweetness and the licorice taste. I remember giving it to my American ex and his first reaction was, this tastes like pavement.
That's fantastic.
But it's a very sort of Northern European treat. If you go to any German or Dutch, especially the Dutch, they love, so you go, if you go up to the Netherlands or anywhere up there and you go to the candy stores, they have 100 of varieties of them.
Wow.
If plain ones, stars, cats. There's one called Double Zoot. There's double salted.
Oh my goodness. That... And question number four, song you always sing in the shower.
There were a lot of songs that I sang again to my kids. And so the first one that came up was Green Eyes by Coldplay, an older one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it's one that sort of, you know, it's a ballad and I used to sing to them when they were little. And so it's something that the lyrics just come back. And I think they come back because my youngest and I have hazily green eyes. So when I look at him, I think green eyes,
aww.
You're the one that, and so that's one that I sing. Another one is a Cure one, Just Like Heaven. I've been singing that one a lot.
Nice.
I tend to go for, I mean, I'm all for in the car, I'll play some Taylor Swift and, you know, get in the mood. But at home, and especially when I'm writing, I tend to crave more emotional music. And that fuels, that often gives me a feeling that I can write with. So my playlists tend to be quite depressing. And I was once doing a road trip with my mom and I had one of my playlists on and an hour into it, she was like, please stop. I can't take it anymore. It's enough of this emotional torture.
No more writing playlist, please. No. Do you listen to music when you're writing?
Most of the time.
That's,
yeah.
Is it instrumental or does it have lyrics to it? Or?
So a lot of the time it's lyrics. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time it's lyrics when I start my day. Mm-hmm. And then it'll move to instrumental because it's almost as if, you know, to get into the zone, into the flow, I need something to break me out of the real world and get into a very specific feeling in order to write. So I have a few playlists of those and then I'll go into more instrumental. And some of them, you know, you can get anything you want on Spotify, YouTube. There's so many great playlists.
Oh, isn't it great now? Yeah.
It's fantastic. And so it can be something like, it's been bossa nova playlists lately, just based on the kind of scenes that I've been writing. But yeah, it always starts off with the more lyrical, heavy emotionally
It
one. Yeah.
transports you to where you need to be.
Exactly.
Great. And the last question, what's the best piece of advice given to you?
I think this one was weird. Well, it was weird in that it was hard to take, but it was that no one is going to save you. And I think we often have, and especially, I've talked with friends, maybe women more than men, that we have a fantasy of being saved by a romantic partner in a way, emotionally saved, emotionally supported, taken care of. And the fact that it's tough, but it's also a relief in some ways that once you own that, nobody's going to save you. You're the heroine in your own story. So at the beginning, it feels like, oh my gosh, I'm all alone. Oh my gosh, there isn't that perfect happy ending always that's going to kind of transport you to this other world. And then when you adapt it more as like a journey and more as the you're the heroine, you lead your story, and you will find a way no matter what. There's sort of this peace and sort of empowering peace that goes with it. So that was the best advice, though at the time was a challenge to
Sure.
hear. Yeah.
I think that's something that a lot of people learn along the way. And once they open
Yeah.
that door, things change.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It's part of growth. It's part of wisdom and knowing yourself and all the rest of those wonderful things you encounter as you age.
Absolutely. Oh gosh, well, I think that is all of my questions. Was there anything else that you wanted to add?
No, I think just I think writing has been one of the most challenging things at first to lean into, like because it's something that I always wanted to do, but never permitted myself to do. And so to get myself to the stage where I actually was writing was very difficult. And then once I started it, it's one of the biggest pleasures. So I would say to, anybody who wants to write or loves writing is not to give up because it is really challenging at the beginning for whatever reasons. And everybody has their own reasons why it is, but it seems to be universally just very difficult on so many
Challenging,
levels.
absolutely.
Yes.
The one
So
similarity we all have.
exactly. Whether it's language, whether it's your ideas, whether it's sitting down to work. And I've met some, once I started opening myself up to the writing community and exchanging with people, because before I would just write in my own little introvert bubble. I'd put, my earphones on and not speak to anyone, thinking that that's the best way to produce a work. But once I started exchanging, it was freeing because then you see how everybody works different. Everybody has struggles differently. Everybody has their own, journeys and so
Absolutely. And you can look at
that
some of the feedback that you get and you can say, "Oh, I didn't think of that," or you can look at it and say, "No, I see where you're going, but I think I'm going to keep this anyway." It's kind of an
exactly
empowering situation.
it is absolutely. And the more people you ask, that becomes true, because if you ask three people and you get all these different opinions, you'll see that sometimes one person will say, well, that didn't work for me, but the next person is saying, no, that really worked for me.
Absolutely. And then you get to pick from that and you kind of go with your gut, like, okay, this is the story I want to
Exactly.
tell. This is where I want it to go.
Yeah.
I'm okay with making this decision.
Exactly.
For more information on Aveline Fortin, please visit avelinefortin.com. Thank you for joining us today. Tune in next time when we talk for real with Joey Benon, author of the critically acclaimed children's book, Pebbles and the Biggest Number.